want to thank the ladies at Airport this morning for this invitation to be here with you today. And I've been looking forward to this for a while now, and I'm delighted to have my mother here with me this morning. As many of you know, she lives in South Carolina, so our opportunities to be together are limited. I'm grateful for each one of you for being here today, and I'm especially grateful to see a lot of familiar faces from my own home congregation, and I know that those and those others who have traveled from far distances to be here had to get up really early this morning to be here. So I appreciate your presence and your sacrifice of sleep, but I do expect you to stay awake. I will also apologize in advance because I'm going to run just about 5 minutes over my time slot, but I could not bear to cut anything more. So if after listening for my 40 minutes that I was allotted, if you're sick of hearing me, you can take a nap the last five, so we'll strike a compromise. Matthew Henry wrote, "A virtuous woman is a woman of resolution, who having espoused good principles is firm and steady to them, and will not be frightened with winds and clouds from any part of her duty. The virtuous woman is a woman of strength. Though the weaker vessel, she is yet strong by wisdom and grace and fear of God. A virtuous woman is a woman of spirit, who has the command of her own spirit and the spirit of others, one that is pious and industrious and a helpmeet for man." Duane Garrett says, "The good wife described here has every virtue that wisdom can offer. She is diligent, has a keen sense for business matters, is compassionate, prepared for the future, is a good teacher, is dedicated to her family, and above all else, possesses the primary characteristic of biblical wisdom, the fear of the Lord." The expression virtuous woman literally means one of power, either in mind or body or both. The virtuous woman had physical, spiritual, emotional, mental, and moral strength. She was the ideal wife and mother. She was the ideal friend and Christian and servant of God and employer. Her noble qualities were cultivated through her diligence and her hard work. And her fear of the Lord and her conscientious efforts to live according to His will likely made it hard to see anything but good in her. She was successful with her endeavors, and she received well-deserved praise for her excellence. She was the kind of woman that every woman ought to want to be, but some assume her to be perfect, that her example is unobtainable. She did set the bar high, but not out of your reach. My hope is that you leave here believing that the virtuous woman was the kind of woman that every woman can be, and that you know how to take hold of that goal and make it your success. Every new day is a gift. That's why we call it the present. God has blessed each of us with a gift called opportunity, but it's up to you to take hold of each day that you're given and make that day a day that you are a woman worthy of praise. All we have to do is mimic the example that we're given. Consider with me five things about the virtuous woman that will help us to make the best use of our gift, the present. First, she lived her life with purpose. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verses 12 through 13 says, "Fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and keep the commandments and statutes of the Lord." Respecting God, living a righteous life, being devoted to God is our unquestionable purpose. Our purpose is to develop thoughts and actions with a heavenward direction. The wonderful qualities and characteristics within the virtuous woman stem from one single motivation, her fear of the Lord, verse 30. She had reverence for God, was devoted to living according to his will, and her life was blessed because of the sense of purpose. Second, she lived her life with priorities. When we live with the purpose of showing devotion to God, our direction is heavenward, as we mentioned, and our actions and decisions are going to revolve around three daily priorities: serving God, serving others, and serving self. Priority number one, serving God. Now, we all recognize the need to serve God publicly by faithfully attending services. And we also recognize the value that we have in coming together and having opportunities to fellowship as you are here today. But where I want to devote a little time now is to serving God privately. The virtuous woman was, as most of us would classify ourselves, busy. Yet she always had her purpose in mind. Matthew Henry explained, her heart is full of another world, while her hands are most busy with this world. When you are busy with the concerns of this world, where is your heart dwelling? Helen Young and Billy Sylvie, authors of Time Management for Christian Women, say, and what, women's time, a balancing act it is, with family, job, home, church, and friends all demanding and deserving our attention. Most of us satisfy the external demands. Babies must be fed, reports must be written, telephones must be answered. It's those less, generally it's those less pressing needs. Time for deeper communication with God, rest and quiet, intellectual stimulation, physical fitness that are neglected. After all, they'll always be there. Charles E. Hummel says, don't let the urgent take place of the important in your life. On your daily list of things to do, are you making time with God for your personal spiritual growth? Or are you letting the urgent take place of the important, because the important will always be there? If you're letting the urgent take place of the important, then your heart is dwelling in the wrong place. Your priorities are out of sync. There are indisputable needs that must be met each day, and meeting those needs does require our time and attention. We can eat a big breakfast, but our stomach still manages to start growling around noon. And few of us don't find it, there's few that would probably find it a hardship to tend to the physical need of hunger. Psalm 107, verse 9 says, for he satisfies the longing soul, and the hungry soul he fills with good things. Does your soul hunger for spiritual food as your body hungers for physical food? How long can you go before your spiritual stomach starts growling? Jane McWhorter, in her book, She Hath Done What She Could, says, obtain from spiritual things for a time, and you will find you do not have an appetite for spiritual food. When a Christian removes herself from her source of strength, she soon dies. You don't have to deal a death blow to a fish to kill it. Just take it away from water, its source of life, and it dies. You don't have to pull up a plant by its roots to end its life. Just cover it so the sunlight can't reach it, and it will be dead in a few days. We're talking about spiritual priorities. We need time with God. So often we look for ways to simplify our stress-filled, hectic lives, ways to make a task easier or faster. People use software like Quicken or calculators to help them balance their checkbooks. We use recipes to cook things instead of trying to guess the ingredients. We take advantage of these things because they are helpful. God also provides us with tools to help us maintain our priorities. When problems arise, we can pray confident that God is listening to every word. When life overwhelms us, we can pick up God's word and read of others who were overwhelmed at times too. Our avenues of communication with God are for our own benefit. Benefits that include strength for the adversity in our lives and peace in knowing that a better life awaits us. The more we immerse ourselves into God's word, the stronger our faith becomes. The stronger our faith, the deeper our resolve is for enduring whatever problems come our way, so that we can take hold of that promise that God said awaits us. Priority number two is to serve others. The worthy woman took care of the needs of those in her family by making proper use of her time, verse 27. She was a hard worker, one who rose early and accomplished much within a day. The Bible Knowledge Commentary says with regard to verse 13, that with eager hands is really suggesting the delight of her hands. That's what it literally means, suggesting she enjoys her work. It's been said, to be happy, don't do whatever you like, like whatever you do. The virtuous woman could enjoy her work because of her perspective. She could rise early and prepare food for her household because she viewed her family as a blessing. She willingly made sacrifices for their benefit because she viewed them as a blessing, not as hindrances to her happiness, as so many women do today. She took pride in her husband and children's happiness and knew that she had the power to set the tone for the whole household. She considered a field, bought it, and planted a vineyard, sold linen garments and sashes. She was business savvy, but her industrious efforts weren't made to the neglect of her family's needs or used for the purpose to get away from her family. She proactively looked for opportunities to bestow good to others and enrich lives with her generosity. In verse 20, we're told she opened her hands to the poor and reached out to the needy. The poor and needy weren't just those who were poor financially, but could also be characterized as those suffering emotional and physical hardships, those spiritually lost or struggling with their faith. So many people miss out on one of life's greatest and most fulfilling blessings because of their own selfishness. Christ said it is more blessed to give than to receive, Acts 20:35. But sometimes we just rather be on that receiving end instead of the giving end. A mother was preparing pancakes for her two sons, Kevin, who was 5, and Ryan, who was 3. Well, the boys began to argue over who was going to get that first pancake. And the mother, seeing a wonderful opportunity for a moral lesson, said, "If Jesus were here, he would say, 'Let my brother have the first pancake. I can wait.'" So Kevin quickly turned to his little brother Ryan and said, "Hey, Ryan, you be Jesus." So often we have this problem. And in Luke chapter 10, verses 38 through 42, we see that Martha had the same problem that little 5-year-old Kevin had. She wanted to be on the receiving end instead of the giving end. She was frustrated because here she was working like a dog while her sister Mary was sitting at Christ's feet listening to his wonderful words of wisdom. And can't you just hear those thoughts just as they're running through her mind? I can't believe she's sitting there while I'm over here slaving over this hot oven, preparing this food that she's going to sit down and eat when she didn't even help. If she had any regard for me at all, she'd get up and be over here helping me so that we could finish in half the time and we could both sit down and relax. And can't you see the way those eyebrows must have been furrowed and those lips drawn in a tight, thin line? Now, because we're honest people, we can all agree that the reason why it's so easy to imagine is because we've all been just like Martha at some point in time in our lives. Serving others requires us to sacrifice, be it the first pancake or time to relax or our finances. Someone once said that a $100 bill can manage to look so small at the shopping mall, but so large when the collection plate is being passed. Though the virtuous woman did enjoy some of the comforts that money could buy, she wasn't so caught up with how money could benefit her that she was willing to part with her funds to do good for others. Now, sometimes people just need our time. Time to talk to someone who's willing to listen with attentive and sympathetic ears. Maybe time to watch their children while they go to a doctor's appointment, or our time to fill in and teach their Bible class because they're unable to attend services because they're sick. Serving others is an act of love. Everyone wants and needs to feel loved and appreciated, and the reality is, oftentimes our serving others has a whole lot less to do with need and a whole lot more to do with love. We take food to someone recovering from surgery, not because someone in their family can't pick up the phone and order a pizza, but because we want them to feel cared for and loved. We buy gifts for expectant parents, not because we're worried they're not going to buy those diapers and wipes and make whatever sacrifice they need to ensure their baby has their needs, but because we love them and we want to share in their happiness. Bernard Rimland, director for the Institute of Child Behavior Research, conducted a study on the Golden Rule. In his studies, he found that the happiest people are those who help others. Each person involved in the study was asked to list the 10 people that he knew best, and then to go back and label those people as either happy or unhappy. Then they were asked to go back and label each person as selfish or unselfish, using the following definition for selfishness: a stable tendency to devote one's time and resources to one's own interest and welfare, an unwillingness to inconvenience oneself for others. In categorizing the results, Rimland found that of all the people who were labeled happy, they were also labeled unselfish. He wrote that those whose actions are devoted to bringing themselves happiness are far less likely to be happy than those whose efforts are devoted to making others happy. God loves a cheerful giver, 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7. The virtuous woman served others with pleasure. Make it your happiness to serve others as she did. Priority number 3 is to serve yourself. And you did hear me right. I just said, serve yourself. God does intend us to love as Christ loved, serving others generously. But what about our own needs? Isn't that the message broadly advocated in today's society? You know, meet your needs. Do what makes you happy, no matter whose well-being is sacrificed along the way. Christian women are unsure of where self is supposed to fall on the list. Many are so afraid of appearing to have this feministic mindset that goes against God's design that they swing to the other extreme and never take time for self. Must it be one extreme or the other? Deny 100% of time for self, or view self as number one priority at all times? A virtuous woman understands that there is a balance necessary, that there are spiritual and mental and emotional and physical pitfalls to the continual neglect of self. Darlene Sala, author of Created for a Purpose, says the woman who denies herself the things in life that she truly needs to function in a strong and healthy way is really selfishly keeping herself for being her best for God, her family, and others. She is being self-destructive, not spiritual. Our lives are like a bank account. You can be the most giving Christian woman in the world, but no matter how full your account is, if you make withdrawal after withdrawal and never put in a self-deposit, you're not going to have anything left to give because you're going to be burnt out. As a result, you're going to fall short of fulfilling the role that God designed for you. Serving self needs to be one of our priorities so that we may be a virtuous woman whose life benefits all who we touch by the way we live. How can we serve ourselves, though? How can we keep our accounts full? 4 things. You can serve yourself by first esteeming yourself, by taking care of yourself physically, by choosing happiness, and refreshing yourself. And we're going to look at each of these a little more in depth. Women need to esteem themselves. So many women suffer from low self-esteem. They question their capabilities. They second-guess themselves. They unfairly compare themselves with others, and they're overly critical of themselves. They question their value and feel unworthy of love, and such feelings hinder them in life. Abraham Karam found that individuals who are told that they are incompetent to achieve a certain goal or do a certain task, even though they've had no previous experience with the goal or task, will perform worse than those who are told that they are competent to achieve the goals and do the task. It doesn't require an outside party to make a person feel inferior. You can be your own worst enemy and cause that problem all by yourself with the things that you tell yourself. Self-talk, the things that you say to yourself and think to yourself mentally, can have a tremendous positive or negative impact on your life and your self-esteem and your relationships with others. If you tell yourself you can't, you won't. We've got to learn to be our own cheerleaders. The good things about you, the positive qualities within you, are things to feel good and positive about. Now, that's not to say that we should behave boastful, and it's also not to say that we shouldn't acknowledge our shortcomings and weaknesses, because that's the only way we can hope to improve is by seeing things as they truly are. But if you look at the bad without looking at the good too, you're going to limit your success in life. The worthy woman regarded herself highly. Had she not, she wouldn't have considered herself capable to go out and buy a field and plant a vineyard, let alone be successful at it. She wouldn't have been the wife and mother that she was had she been compromised by low self-esteem. She wouldn't have been able to give to the needy and the poor had she not felt that she had something to offer. God made us in His image, Genesis 1:27. We are all worthy in His sight, capable of great things, though our talents and abilities vary. Esteem yourself as He does. Second, women need to take care of themselves physically. Verse 17 of our text says she dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She worked with energy, and energy comes from adequate rest, exercise, and a balanced diet. Research recommends that the average adult gets 7 to 8 hours of sleep each night. Now, though it is a little tempting at times to sleep a little less to get a little more done, the idea is most likely to backfire on you. When your body gets done, your immune system doesn't function as it should, and you're potentially causing yourself to miss days of productive work on account of being sick. In addition to being more susceptible to illness, you're probably a whole lot less enjoyable to be around. We get grumpy. Our patience is stretched by the smallest of things, and our reactions often become sharp. There was a lady in an airport who was traveling on one of those dreaded red-eye flights. She was tired and hungry, so she bought herself a box of cookies, and she sat down and pulled her book out of her bag, and this man had come along and sat down next to her, and the next thing she knew, he was opening the box of cookies and eating one of them. Well, this really disturbed her, but she didn't want to cause a scene, and she thought, well, he's only eating one. But then he took another one. So she thought, well, rather than have him eat up her whole box of cookies, I'll just reach over and take one myself. So she took one, and then he took one, and she took one, and this went back and forth until they came to the last cookie. Well, the man picked up the last cookie, and he said, would you like to split it with me? The woman was absolutely furious. She reached over and snatched that cookie from the man, gathered up her belongings, and stormed off. And by the time she got on the plane, she was still fuming at this man. She reached into her bag before putting it in the overhead compartment to get her book, and what she pulled out was her box of cookies. In addition to fatigue making us grumpy and irritable, it's plain to see that fatigue also impairs our thinking, and preventing ourselves from acting like fools is probably the best incentive of all for getting enough rest. Experts believe that regular exercise is the single most important thing that anyone can do to improve their overall health and well-being. Exercise reduces stress and anxiety. It increases levels of brain chemicals that encourage the growth of nerve cells. It improves memory skills and energy levels. Eating well-balanced meals will fuel our bodies with the vitamins and nutrients it needs to perform at its maximum capacity. A virtuous woman will take time to care for herself. Women need to choose happiness. Dennis Holy, author of Are You Happy?, reports that only 20% of Americans claim to be happy. When it comes to happiness, you are the captain of your ship. Dr. Randy Posh, a professor at Carnegie Mellon, who is a father and of three children under six and a husband, is dying of pancreatic cancer. In a farewell speech that he gave to his students, he told them, in life, you can choose to be a Tigger or an Eeyore. Happiness is within everyone's grasp, no matter what circumstances may accompany your life. You can choose happiness by being content. There's nothing wrong with wanting something. Some wants are based upon very legitimate reasons, but when we become so consumed with getting our wants, then our contentment becomes a problem and our happiness becomes unreachable, in addition to putting us in jeopardy of making some really bad financial decisions. Something that seems to be the norm among Americans today, Christians and non-Christians alike. According to the Federal Reserve Bank, 40% of American families spend more than what they earn. Americans' average credit card debt is $8,400 per household. The average household pays $83.33 in credit card interest per month. An $8,000 debt at an 18% interest rate will take over 25 years to pay off and cost over $24,000 in the long run. The virtuous woman didn't operate above her means. She wasn't a financial liability to her husband. The word considers in verse 16 indicates that she didn't make her purchases on impulse, but rather gave them thought, determined if they were reasonable and based upon need or certain prosperity. When we purchase above our means, we've got a problem with contentment. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 8, we read, "Now there is great gain in godliness with contentment. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content." You can choose happiness by focusing on the good experiences in life instead of the bad ones. Not everything in life is going to go your way and work out the way you want them to. A person expects their children to outlive them, but sometimes they bury their children. A person expects to be married for life, but sometimes their spouse turns to another. After working in a place of employment for 20 years, a person may have a reasonable expectation to continue there until retirement. But sometimes companies are bought out, and it's out with the old and in with the new. There is no one traveling down the road of life that doesn't have painful baggage in the trunk. But just because you know it's there doesn't mean you have to pull over every mile and open the trunk to view it. Count your blessings. Give yourself the perspective you need by reminding yourself that somewhere out there, there's someone, probably a lot of someones, who are suffering far worse hardships than you are. You can also choose happiness by surrendering to change. Life is full of changes, and not all of them are easy to adjust to. And let's face it, most of us just don't like change. We like things the way they are. Helen Keller says, "When one door of happiness closes, another opens. But often we look so long at the door that is closed that we do not see the one which has been opened for us." There will always be things that might have been, things that didn't work out the way you expected, or opportunities missed. No one promised that life would be easy, but you can get through anything. Philippians 4:13 says, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." Getting through those adjustments requires an attitude of resolve, that you will live life to its fullest and choose happiness each day, no matter what accompanies or doesn't accompany your day. Consuming yourself with the desire for more, pining for the way things used to be or just the way you wanted them to be, is settling for second best in life. Don't let that be good enough for you. Choose happiness. Women need to refresh themselves. We need to designate some time to do the things that we enjoy doing. I enjoy scrapbooking, and once a month I get together with some of my corrupted friends and enjoy that creative outlet. I also enjoy a dinner out with some of my close girlfriends once a month, too. I make my kids have a daily quiet time, and during that time, I have my lunch, because for whatever reason, I just like having one meal out of each day where I don't have to wipe up any spills or refill any plates or remind someone that they need to be talking less and eating more. I also like to read during that time because I just enjoy reading. Serving self, as we have described it, and selfishness are not even close to the same thing. One cannot be selfish and be pleasing to God, but one must take time, some legitimate time, for serving self so that they can put deposits into their account. Happy, healthy people have far more to offer to God and their families and others. A virtuous woman is a woman of purpose who sees the need for priorities in her life, but priorities are more than just perspective. It's one thing to view something as important, it's another to view it as essential. Now, if you didn't have it before, you've got the know. But the know alone will only get you so far without the how. Believe that you can be a virtuous woman. Value the greatness of a life with priorities. When these three priorities become essential requirements of your day, they become your goals. The great motivational speaker and author Zig Ziglar uses this acronym with the word goals: godly objectives assure lasting success. The virtuous woman's success was lasting because she had godly objectives, and her success was realized because she understood her purpose and her priorities. But how did she obtain success? That brings us to our next 2 points. If your overall goal is to be a virtuous woman, then your purpose and priorities must be joined with plans and a proper balance. The virtuous woman lived her life with plans. Obtaining goals requires planning. Planning requires thought. Thought requires solitude. Solitude requires taking time for self. And it's time taken for self that's for the good of your service to God and others. There are several references made to the worthy woman's planning. Verse 18 says, her lamp does not go out at night. There's a similar reference made to a lamp in the parable of the 10 virgins in Matthew chapter 25, verses 1 through 13. In the parable, 10 virgins took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 were deemed as foolish because they took no oil with them. The other five were deemed as wise because they carried flasks of oil with their lamps. Those who gave no forethought to the hours that their lamps would be burning were forced to leave to find a place to buy more oil. But those who planned ahead went with the bridegroom to the marriage feast. The foolish women missed their opportunity given their lack of planning. The virtuous woman in Proverbs 31 was one with solid plans for reaching her goals, so much that she could laugh at the time to come in verse 25. Serving others was a goal of the virtuous woman. She made the necessary plans to see that her family had provisions that they needed to stay warm in the winter, verse 21. She had no reason to fret over the cold because she had planned and prepared for it and had her family clothed in scarlet. Have you goals you've yet to meet? Have you given any thought as to why you haven't met them? Perhaps it's because you've lacked the plans on how to obtain the goal. Maybe last year you said, I'm going to start taking better care of myself. But the 365 days that followed that goal were no different than the day you made that goal. So what happened? What went wrong? Well, to help us not make declarations followed with no actions, let's note 3 important things about setting and achieving goals. First, we must understand there are different types of goals. Now, you have your overall goals and your 3 priorities that lie beneath that goal, and then you're going to have categories within those 3 priorities. For example, if you under a serving others, you may have wife, sister, daughter, mother, friend. And each one of those categories are going to have independent goals. The goals that you set are not going to come in a one-size-fits-all package. Some are going to be long-term, some short-range, some daily and ongoing. Second, you have to understand the need for specifically defining what your plans are. If you want to be a better mother, then you have to identify what areas you have weaknesses in, and then determine what you could do to improve in those areas. Maybe you have identified that you could make your child feel more important and that you could be more patient with them. A child spells love, T-I-M-E. Intentionally devote a little extra time to your child. Take them on an outing where they can have a few minutes alone time with you. You don't even have to do anything special or out of the ordinary to make your child feel important. Include them in what you're doing. Invite them to cook with you. Engage them in conversation. They'll pick up that you like their company. Now, one of the reasons that we're impatient with our children is because we don't take the time to properly equip ourselves with the tools to deal with moments of frustration. And boy, there's a lot of them, aren't there? Anybody can spank a child, but not everybody knows how to discipline a child. So often when we use the word discipline, we just think of punishment. But there's a whole other aspect to the word discipline. Training, instruction that brings about obedience. To truly discipline a child, you have got to be able to reach their heart. Read the first 9 chapters of Proverbs repeatedly. Invest in some good books on parenting, like, for instance, Boundaries for Kids by Drs. Cloud and Townsend. Making Children Mind Without Losing Yours by Dr. Kevin Lehman. And one of my all-time favorites, How to Raise Kids You Want to Keep by Jerry Day. Now, these books are going to help give you some tools that you need for this discipline, not the punishment sort, that is. When we're better equipped to deal with our kids, then we can respond to them proactively instead of reactively, which always means frustration and impatience. Maybe you need to find a way to get more rest or solitude. Enforce a quiet time rule. Or instead of doing housework when that baby is napping, just to put that laundry on hold for an hour because you know what? It's not going anywhere. Now maybe those towels are going to have some wrinkles in them because they weren't folded when they were warm. But do you really think the person drying off with them is going to notice or refuse to use them because they have wrinkles? Maybe whatever goals you have to define what the need is. And then devise a plan that will make that goal something you achieve. Invest in a good personal planner to help you meet those goals. I like Zig Ziglar's performance planner because the first 17 pages of it have valuable information that will help you chart a course and maintain your plans and keep your goals. Third, you have to devise a realistic plan. Our goals will never be achieved, our plans anything more than good intentions, unless we realize that most of them aren't going to happen overnight. Don't get caught up with feeling that changes of improvement aren't good unless they're dramatic and rapid. Dramatic and rapid changes aren't always a good thing. Doctors say there's nothing worse you could do to your body than to be one of those yo-yo dieters. But a person who makes diligent effort to make gradual changes in their lifestyle has a far greater chance of long-term success than the one who does the yo-yo thing. Now, sometimes we fall into the trap of being a yo-yo plan setter. We get revved up by something, or maybe we feel those really uncomfortable, painful pulls of guilt by something, and we conjure up all these great intentions. We convince ourselves that we can make all sorts of major changes in our lives with the snap of a finger. But that's not the way it happens. What does happen is that we find ourselves forgetting. Then we find ourselves falling short of our plans. We get to feeling bad, and we don't like feeling bad. So then we just decide not to subject ourselves to that kind of discomfort, and so we quit instead of realizing that if we had viewed success as the long-term goal that it is, we would have been so far better off. A runner doesn't go out and run 5 miles on their first day, but takes on short stints consistently, gradually building up time and speed, knowing that that is what is going to get them to the 5-mile mark. Cultivating a habit is like running, but instead of conditioning your body, you're conditioning your mind. Aristotle said, "Excellence is an art won by training and habituation. We do not act rightly because we have virtue or excellence, but rather we have those because we have acted rightly. We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act, but a habit. If you want to reach your goals, you have got to ease into your plans. And if you've multiple goals, you've got to put your plans in effect in phases. If you don't set reachable, realistic goals, you'll undermine yourself before you even start. Begin by picking the most crucial goal. Maybe it's the area that you're weakest in, and make miniature goals for the month for yourself. If your goal is to be a better mother, then perhaps you might make a goal to read one book on parenting and take your child on one outing over the course of a month. At the end of the month, evaluate your status. Did you get closer to meeting your overall goal? Did you do what you set out to do? If so, then require a little more of yourself the following month. And then the next month, a little more. And if 1 month you find you weren't able to do what you set out to do, then stick to that schedule for another month. Slow and steady is what wins the race. Aubrey Johnson, in his book, The Barnabas Factor, says there are many small steps to be enjoyed along the pathway of life. To overlook the significance of these steps is to be deprived of immeasurable joy. Success is much more of a journey than a destination. Never minimize small steps forward. It is not the size of the stride, but the direction that counts. The smallest effort is better than the greatest excuse. Fourth, she lived her life with proper balance. Successful women and people in general operate their lives with purpose, priorities that become goals, plans, and proper balance. A woman may make a goal to be the most successful real estate agent in her area and be successful in achieving that goal. But at what cost? Could she be called successful as a wife, as a mother, as a Christian and friend? Without proper balance, they'll never obtain true success. The virtuous woman's life was lived with proper balance, and it was one of the keys to her success. Her attention was divided in many areas, none of which suffered because she regarded the important things as important and treated the little things with regard to what they were. Her perspective was remarkable because her heart was dwelling in another place, though her hands were busy with this world. A proper balance will help us to devise good plans. Our plans will help us to reach our goals. Our goals will help us to live with purpose, with spiritual priorities. Why be a virtuous woman? Why strive to live with purpose? Why live with priorities, plans, and a proper balance? So you can prosper. In 3 John verse 2, John says, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health just as your soul prospers. We're talking about soul prosperity. Soul prosperity may or may not include financial prosperity, but it includes all the things that money can't buy. The virtuous woman lived her life with prosperity, and not just of the financial sort. She was successful in every aspect of life. Wouldn't you consider yourself prosperous if you heard that your husband called you priceless? Verse 10. Isn't watching your children grow up into fine Christian men and women the ultimate success story in life? Verse 28. Wouldn't you consider your life prosperous if your industrious efforts and your home management skills bless those that you love the most? Could there be any greater compliment in the world besides knowing that God looks upon you with loving eyes of approval? Verse 30. There are no better compliments in life. You too can prosper in all that you do. You can be just like that virtuous woman and reap all of the blessings that she had, because you now have the know and the how. And if you're willing to put the action behind it, then you too will prosper in all that you do. Prosperity, like happiness, is a choice. A man came from America, from Eastern Europe. After being processed to Ellis Island, he went to find something to eat and landed himself into a cafeteria. Well, not understanding how a cafeteria worked, he went and sat down at a table waiting on someone to come take his order. But nobody came. A lady with a tray full of food came and sat across him and told him, the way it works is you start at that end of the line and you just go down and you pick whatever you want, and when you get to the other end, they'll tell you how much you have to pay for it. Life is like a cafeteria. You can have anything you want as long as you're willing to pay the price. What do you want in life? Do you want a happy marriage? Do you want to feel like the best part of your husband's day is when he gets to come home and be with you? Do you want to be a good parent? Do you want your children to feel that you are their biggest cheerleader? That there is no one who could love them and support them and encourage them or offer them better guidance in the world? Do you want to be a good friend? Do you want to be a good Christian? You can have all those things if you're willing to pay the price that comes from living with purpose and priorities. If you're willing to invest time for planning for your future. If you're willing to make sacrifices to keep your life in proper balance, then you can have prosperity that would make a millionaire's fortune look meager. Today is a gift. Tomorrow, Lord willing, will bring another gift. The question is, what will you do with your present? Will you live it with purpose, bringing glory to God? Will you live your life with priorities that have turned into goals? Will those goals involve plans that will bring you to meeting those goals? Will your decisions reflect a proper balance? And will everything you do be prosperous to your life and those around you? You too can be a worthy woman, praised for your excellence. Thank you this morning for your good time and attention.